This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
All right, guys, this is another episode of the Focus Hunting Podcast. This is episode number... number are we on here? 32. Wow. It's funny how when you're listening to podcasts, you always laugh at guys who can't remember what episode they're on, and here I'm doing the same thing. Anyway, today I'm joined by Mike Slinkard, founder of Hex. Mike shares some of his hunts with us, and he tells us all about the Hex technology. You guys should go over to the Hex website, check them out, see what they're all about. They can be found at hexllc.com. That's HECSLLC.com. When you're there, if you guys are going to pick something up, make sure you use the promo code HEXTECH, and you're going to get a little discount on your order. So that's pretty cool. Those promo codes are awesome. I love those promo codes. I got another one here for you guys. When you're at the Backroads Maps book webpage, make sure you use the promo code FOCUS. You're going to get another 10% off your order. That's a good one as well. Be sure to check them out. What else we got? Focus Hunting website. When you guys are there, make sure you use the promo code PODCAST, and you're going to get 25% off your order. So, good stuff. Anyway, that's all I got here for today for deals for you guys. So let's just get rolling with this episode. Well, this sucks.
There, Kevin.
How you doing, Mike?
Good. Good. How are you today?
Good. Good. I'm down at my folks' house here for the long weekend here up in Canada, so it's nice.
All right. Cool. Cool. What part of Canada are you in again?
British Columbia, Kelowna. Oh,
okay.
Down to the southern, southeastern end of British Columbia there. Not quite the Kootenays, but not far from the border.
Oh, okay. Cool.
The warm part.
Yeah. Is there a warm part of Canada? I didn't know that. I've been to Canada every time. It's always cold as hell up there.
I bet. Where are we catching up with you today?
I'm in Eastern Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
Not to be confused with Western Oregon.
How long have you been out there?
Pretty much forever. I've lived here. Gosh, I went to school here and everything. So I'm born and raised pretty much right here. So.
Yeah. How's the weather down there?
Beautiful today. Gosh, about 65 degrees and sunny. And yeah, for spring, it's pretty nice. Probably snow tomorrow.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it's pretty typical. We had a big snowstorm like 3 or 4 days ago that came through. But I was actually at a trade show in Portland last weekend, and we had all kinds of snow coming back. It was a crazy drive. But so we're all the way on the eastern part of the state, almost the Idaho border.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. You got turkey season down there, or is there turkey season in Oregon?
15th of April it starts here. So yeah, it's getting close.
Yeah, that's the same day ours starts up here. So
okay,
gonna try to get out and do a bit of scouting and
Yeah, well, it should be. It's that time of year. They should be good. So, you guys got quite a few turkeys there in southern BC?
Not a lot. They're mountain turkeys too, so they're a lot of work. They're not a lot of
Yeah.
fun. They're fun when you get them, but they're not a lot of fun
Yeah.
to find them. Locating them is
That's
the real trick.
yeah. No, well, that's how it used to be here. We actually have turkeys everywhere now, but used to be that was the case here too. If you found some, you better not tell anybody because they were kind of a closely held secret at that point. But
Yeah, luckily up here, not a lot of guys like to hunt them. But I think not a lot of guys like to hunt them just because they're so difficult to hunt. So.
yeah, they are. They're well, I mean, the hardest thing about turkeys, even if you have a lot of them, is getting them to do what they're supposed to do, getting them to come to the call and a decoy and all that stuff. I mean, it's can be the most frustrating kind of hunt ever.
And you guys bow hunt them down there.
Yeah, I've only bow hunted them, except for last year. I actually shot two birds with a shotgun last year because I had rotator cuff surgery and I couldn't draw my bow. So I shot a couple with a shotgun. Actually, one of them wearing an orange vest just to kind of prove a point with hacks. And we don't use blinds or anything like that. That's the biggest thing with turkeys and hacks is that you can actually get away with movement. It's pretty crazy what you can actually get away with. So
So you're hunting turkeys with an orange vest. Like you're wearing
yeah.
an orange vest. Are you in a blind?
No, sitting out in the open. Actually, that video is on our YouTube page right now. So
Okay, hold on a sec. You're sitting out in the open, like just out in the open and not in behind a bush
Yeah,
with a bright orange.
just sitting on a chair. Actually, like I said, it's on our YouTube page. Yeah, so with hex, that's one of the biggest things. So birds see electrical fields visually, and that's actually pretty well known from what they know about how birds navigate. But yeah, so you block the electrical field, and any movement that you do within reason is not seen by a turkey as living movement. So they don't pay attention to it. And guess what? They don't pay attention to color either.
So
So.
that's that probably upset a few turkey hunters because I know they're pretty religious when it comes to camo and what you can wear and stuff.
Yeah, no,
Upset a
it
few
is,
folks
but.
down there.
When you understand how birds actually see, and all animals pick up on it, and that's that's where hex comes from. But when you understand how birds actually see, that electrical field's what's actually giving them away more than anything else. Honestly, it really, really is. You take the electrical field away, and like I said, I've killed probably 40 or maybe a few more than that turkeys with a bow. We don't hunt in a blind ever. We just set out, and I mean, you can draw on them every time, all day long. Every species doesn't matter.
So these,
So,
and you've only shot out of that many birds, you've only shot one with a shotgun? Two or two with a shotgun?
two with a shotgun last year because I couldn't draw my bow, and that's the only reason. So, yeah.
What's your archery setup for like a turkey hunt? Like your poundage and like what's your arrow setup?
Yeah, I just
Hunt
shoot
like
the
that.
same bow I hunt with all the time. It's 70 pounds. I do use a big expandable when I'm shooting turkeys.
Oh
Just
yeah.
try to cut as big a hole as you can, because I mean that's the one thing about turkeys and bow hunting—you have to hit them right, and they're tough if you don't. So, so that's one of the big things is that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, as far as getting a shot and all that, I mean, I'm not at any disadvantage with my bow over a shotgun. I'm really not, other than just making sure that you can hit them in the right spot.
Yeah. You've been shooting for a long time though. Your whole
Yeah,
life.
I shot professionally for 8 or 9 years back in the early 2000s, late 90s and early
Yeah.
2000s. So yeah, I've been shooting forever. So
Yeah. What about so you got do you have a turkey hunt plan for the season?
I'm actually going up to Alaska to hunt brown bear in May.
Oh,
So
nice.
I'm just doing the local stuff. We can shoot three birds apiece here locally. So, I've got myself, my daughter Caitlin, her future husband, and then another buddy of mine. So we'll get plenty of footage here locally. So we're not really planning on traveling this year.
Yeah, well, that grizzly hunt's pretty exciting. Is that the first time hunting grizzly or brown
It
bear?
is.
Or whereabouts are you hunting? I guess it all depends whereabouts you're hunting, if it's a grizzly or a brown
Yeah,
bear.
it's brown bear. It's out on the peninsula on the very southern part of the southern side of the Alaskan Peninsula. It's where the big ones are. So
Oh
there in
yeah.
Kodiak are the biggest bears in the world. So
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. That's up by Kodiak. Yeah, that's not that's right neighboring us. Cool.
for
Is
sure.
this
So
yeah, that's gonna be a fun. Now you're bow hunting, grizzly?
Yeah. I haven't shot anything with a rifle as far as big game goes since 1996. It's nothing. I'm not an anti-rifle guy. It just doesn't do nothing for me. So I shoot everything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, if you can do it, absolutely. It's not easy, but that grizzly hunt's going to be pretty cool. That's pretty intense archery hunt.
It'd be a high pressure shot. It'd be the highest pressure shot I've shot in a while.
Yeah. So what's like your preferred shot distance, or I guess what would be like your max shot distance for a grizzly bear?
I really don't want to shoot anything past 50, to be honest with you. I'm 100% confident at anything 50 and under. I'm confident. You know, I practice a lot at 80 and even at 100 just to practice, but I don't want to shoot bear that far. You know, I want to shoot anything 50 or under, I feel pretty good about. To be honest with you, I'd almost rather shoot one at about 30 than I would at, you know, 20 or 10, to be honest with you, just because of what they are. But
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, there's a point where you're comfortable, and then there's a point where you're just a little too close when you're around grizzly bears, for sure.
Yeah, because they're unpredictable and they move pretty quick. So, I don't move pretty quick, not anymore. So,
well, that's going to be fun. What kind of arrow setup you got for that? Like, are you using a heavier broadhead for that?
No, I'm going to use the same thing that I use for elk and moose and everything. I shoot Victory arrows. They weigh right at 450 grains.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to shoot, I use the Shuttle T head and I have forever. They cut a big hole. They penetrate well. I mean, I've killed three moose with that setup. I've killed eland in Africa. You know, I've killed lots of big stuff with it. So I'm pretty confident. I don't want them to change a lot. I played with some heavy arrows, but I really don't gain enough kinetic energy, honestly, to justify the velocity that I lose. So,
right.
You know, so it's, yeah. So I'm not going to change a whole lot up. I'm just going to use what's always worked and let's go with that.
Yeah. That's a cool hunt though. I wish we were still allowed to hunt grizzly bear up here. You had to put in for an LEH draw up here for grizzly bear, but now you're not allowed to hunt them at all, which is a bummer. But I never got an LEH draw ever, but man, I wish I would have now.
Yeah, it's sad what they're doing with that, honestly. It's because, I mean, this is not like it. This is like everything else. They need to be managed like everything else. So.
Oh, yeah, just, definitely.
Too many, you know, emotions involved around bears for some reason.
Yeah, well, all predators in that matter, like cougars, and it's just insane. And there's so many of them up here, especially in BC.
Actually, I've hunted BC a couple of times. I was up there a couple of years ago hunting moose.
Oh, and nice.
We had more grizzly encounters than we did moose encounters up there. So,
yeah, which part of the province were you in, the northern part?
Yeah, about three quarters of the way up. Watson Lake, does that sound right?
Yep. You bet. Watson Lake.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. We were, actually took off there. I can't remember the name of the little town that was up there, but you know, we took a float plane out of there and then went into some lakes that were way back, long ways in anyway. So.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. No, that's some pretty, BC's got some pretty, pretty neat topography.
It's got everything up there. I love it up there. I really do.
Have you hunted anywhere else up here in Canada?
Saskatchewan a couple of times. I actually shot a Canadian moose in Saskatchewan. Shot a couple bears over there too. So that's pretty much my Canadian experience. Well, we were in the territories after caribou once too. So.
Oh yeah, that's cool. Yeah. So, yeah. That's
been
what.
Up there a few times.
That's one of my hunts this year, is a caribou hunt up north. So.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, I'd like to do it again. When we went, the herd hadn't moved down yet, so they were way, you know, they're about 100 miles away. When I ended up shooting one, the only one I saw, and he wasn't very big, but you know what, he's the only one I saw, so I got to take one home. Nobody else did. So
yeah, that's cool, man. You've had a pretty successful hunting career. When we were talking there through emails, you're telling me how many elk you've harvested, and you've killed more elk than I've had than I've been around years on this earth. So
yeah, 46 this year with a bow. So yeah.
Those are all with a bow?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all with a bow. Yeah.
Wow. When did you kill your first bull?
Oh gosh, I was probably a sophomore in high school. So gosh, that's a long time ago. About 1981 that would have been. So yep.
Yeah. So, that's cool.
So yeah, we have a lot of elk here locally. So I grew up hunting them, and it's my thing. I mean, I've hunted them in, you know, gosh, Arizona, New Mexico, a lot in Idaho, Montana. You know, I've hunted them, you know, all over. That's my go-to species. I like elk and stuff better than about anything there is.
Yeah, I love chasing elk too. 46 elk is a lot of elk. What do you have any of those hunts that really stand out to you? Like probably your first one, I imagine, is tough to beat.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, the first one, just because it was so novel, you know, back then in the 80s, nobody was doing it much. So it was, especially for to have a kid do it, was pretty novel. But gosh, you know, I don't know. There's a lot. I mean, I took a really nice bull in 2019. And actually it was number 45, and I'm a big Donald Trump fan. So I called him Trump, and he's a 360 class bull. And then, in Arizona, I shot a 370 bull in Arizona in 2017. That was a pretty memorable hunt. Probably the most one that is one of my better ones. I shot a 363 bull here in Oregon a few years ago that I didn't even get on film, but the, you know, I actually, it was kind of a crazy deal. I shot him and actually broke his shoulder completely with a bow, believe it or not. Broke his shoulder, but it didn't get all the way into the chest cavity. So I ended up leaving him that night, found him that, you know, actually 2 days later, still alive. I actually had a game camera picture of him on this water that, you know, I don't know if I really want to tell that whole story, but it's a cool story if we're not recording. Because, you know, like I said, I hit him. I actually ended up having a dream in the middle of the night, believe it or not, that that he was on this water. And of course I talked myself out of it by the time I got up there. And anyway, I walked all the way into where this water was, and sure enough, he was there. And I had one picture of him, and it happened to be at 2 o'clock in the morning when I woke up. That happened to be the 2 o'clock in the morning when I woke up the night before. So kind of a weird sort of a deal there.
No doubt.
He actually cool. was there. Yeah. So anyway, but that one was memorable just because of the circumstance and all the things that came together. And, you know, he was a giant, well, 6x7 bull. So.
You know, yeah, that's one thing. I mean, I'll never shoot 46 elk, but I don't think you can ever get tired of hunting them.
No, you can't. I mean, there's nothing like, I mean, I've called them in, I've shot them over water, you know, everything, but that it's hard to beat calling them. I mean, calling them is kind of what keeps me going, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. You said you've been to South Africa too. What's that like? I got two places. That's South Africa and New Zealand. Those are kind of like my my bucket list places to hunt.
I've actually been to both. So I've been really? In South Africa 3 times. And that's after there's no place like Africa. I mean, it's, you'll never, if you go once, you know, there's always, everybody says, man, I just like to go once. Well, nobody just likes to go once they've been there. You know, I mean, you got to pick your spots. It's some of the places are pretty canned, but if you get a, you know, a place that's got a big area and they're actually hunting, you know, fair chase and all that, it can be beat. Then New Zealand's, it's cool too. The you know, roaring stags are amazing as well. They just never shut up if you go during the roar. So if you're an elk hunter, it's like, you know, more noise than elk make by about 20.
Yeah. So. They're cool. They're almost intimidating how with that roar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, they are. No, they're cool. So now I've been fortunate. I've got to chase around quite a bit and shoot quite a few arrows of things. So that's
good, man.
No complaints.
Yeah. So Mike, I think we kind of got rolling down a tangent there. You know, maybe you can just let some of the Canadians listening up here, you know, the people who are wondering, you know, who the heck I'm talking to here. Maybe you could just tell a bit about yourself.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been a lifelong bow hunter, and I've also been fortunate enough to be in the outdoor industry for, you know, what, 26 years now. I actually started Winner's Choice Bowstrings back in 2000, and we grew that company to, you know, one of the largest string manufacturers in the world, and ended up selling that to Elite Archery in 2012. So that's one of my backgrounds. And of course, you know, I actually shot professional archery before that for quite a few years, just enough to be dangerous. I didn't really win a lot of world championships or anything, but I was always pretty competitive. And I competed on the Great Outdoor Games for ESPN all the years that they had that, which was absolutely addicting. So yeah, I've done a lot of things. And then of course, I've always been kind of a kind of a science geek and that, and, you know, always interested in why things are the way they are. And, you know, that's what kind of caused us to go down the hex path and understand how electrical fields are being used by all kinds of animals. And figured out that if you block them, they make a big difference. So, in a nutshell, that's sort of my background.
Yeah. Winner's choice bowstrings. My cousin was telling me about this, and this was before I was into archery. He just said that kind of just changed everything as soon as it came out. What was the deal with the winner's choice bowstrings?
Back when I was competing, you know, 3D archery, we did field archery, indoor, you name it. If you could shoot an arrow at it, I was competing at it. But back in the day, whoever could keep up with their stretching bowstrings and bus cables was usually the guy who won. And so at the time I had another guy working with me and we actually developed a way to basically take the stretch out of a bowstring when you're building it. At the time that wasn't even thought of. So we launched that and like I said, made quite a name for ourselves. We were the first string company that ever could guarantee no creep, which is actually the technical term for, you know, the elongation of a string or a cable. And then also no serving separation, which is a big thing with bows, is the serving, the wrapping that goes around the strings would separate. And of course, that's what protects the string from abrasion. The peep sight that you put in the string, we didn't have to use any peep aligners or anything because we could guarantee them coming back straight every time. So it was pretty giant leap actually at the time. Everybody takes it for granted now.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. When I was talking to him, all this stuff that he talks about, like, that was before I started shooting, got into archery, and when I got into it, all this stuff was already out. So you just start with that and it's kind of you just take it for granted, like you said. Yeah, that's pretty neat. But he talks about it. He was telling me about it and he said, yeah, that's because when I mentioned I was doing a show with you, and then he mentioned the bowstrings, and he said, yeah, that was like a major leap in, because he said before, same thing, they're always messing around with their strings and have
always history.
And so he said that was
those things, if they just move a little bit, your point of impact changes dramatically. So we've got it to where, you know, you could set them and leave them, and so, you know, when you sighted your bow and you have everything working, it would stay that way for, you know, I mean, the whole season or sometimes two or three seasons. It was kind of a fun little jaunt into the outdoor industry, and you know, the cool things, I got to meet a lot of people in the industry and really good friends of, you know, people that are, you know, very influential. Pete Shapley's one, is a good friend of mine, and of course I shoot PSE and have forever and ever. And so guys like that, Will Primos, I know Will very well. It's just a pretty small little circle when you're actually in it, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've never shot a PSC, but I mean, I see all you guys shooting them and Dudley shooting them, so they got to be good for sure. So you must have seen a lot of changes in the archery industry.
Pretty much all of them. Pretty much all of them. I mean, I started shooting. I don't remember learning how to shoot a bow because I was so young. My dad got me into it. I honestly don't remember learning how to shoot a bow or a gun. My dad got me into all that stuff, and it's I was born in 65. So by 1970, I was shooting arrows for sure. It just kind of goes there. So, I mean, I pretty much got to see at least some of just about all modern archery, to be honest with you. I mean, I actually shot a tournament one time with Tom Jennings. Never was fortunate enough to meet Fred Bear, but, you know, he was still kicking around in a lot of the places I was at. I just never got to meet him. I wish I would have. I basically from compound bows forward, I've seen and kind of lived through it all. So, yeah.
Yeah. You said
kind of a cool time.
Yeah. You said your dad got into it. You think about what their generation used for bows and the stuff they did. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, they started with recurves and, you know, building your own arrows and, you know, I mean, not necessarily, you know, like, you know, going out and finding your own shaft material and that kind of thing. But at the time, I mean, I've never known my dad to buy a pre-made arrow, and I certainly haven't myself either. I've built everything myself even to this day, but back then it was a necessity, you know? And so, just the the amount of equipment and options back then wasn't very much. You know, you're shooting a recurve bow of one of about three or four brands, and you know, a lot of guys were still shooting cedar arrows. I can remember when fiberglass arrows came in, and then finally aluminum, and then of course now we're shooting carbon all the time. So
yeah, that's cool.
Pretty cool transition.
Yeah, definitely. So now you're with Hex. You're the president of Hex. Maybe maybe we can get into that. Just let everybody know what exactly Hex is.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, Hex is, you know, it's an acronym. It stands for Human Energy Concealment Systems. And that's exactly what we do. We actually, our technology actually blocks the electrical fields that are coming out of our body. So, you know, the through heart rate and muscle movement, every living being actually creates electrical fields, and they actually travel out of your body. Medical science has known this for a long, long time. The interesting thing about that is that they are extreme low frequency electromagnetic fields. So that was key, because back when we were, you know, because I've always been the kind of guy that just, I don't believe in magic. So it's kind of like, well, you know, why is it that animals, when they get in close, every condition could be right, and you're going to watch their body language change in a very short amount of time. They may not throw their head up and run, but that you can tell they know something's there. They just sense it. And, you know, my grandfather was a big horse guy. They're ranchers, my uncle, my grandfather, and that he was big with horses. And you know, he always used to say, you know, you got to stay calm, keep your heart rate down, you know, because that horse can feel you. He said he knows what you're thinking, whether you know it or not. He can feel that. And I always kind of just accepted that as fact. And you know, just a series of little kind of happenstance events got me, you know, kind of wondering why. And originally was just getting on the internet and kind of, you know, I somehow went down the rabbit hole of, you know, the internal compass and how animals navigate. And through all that, you know, they know that they're picking up the electromagnetic field of the Earth. Well, just so happens that the Earth's electromagnetic field is an extreme low frequency, just like what comes out of living beings through heart rate and muscle. Very, very similar. So I just put two and two together. It's like, if they can navigate with it, they can probably use it for other things. And lo and behold, guess what they do? So by blocking that, you can really see how much the electromagnetic, you know, atmosphere actually affects just about every animal that we've tested with, actually. Some definitely more than others, but yeah. So that's what we're about.
So you said the medical science, they've been using this technology for a while now?
Well, not Hex technology, but, you know, if you get an EKG or, you know, that, or just study what kind of electrical fields are produced by, you know, every living being. I mean, we're all electric. I mean, that's actually electrical current that runs our muscles. Of course, the heart produces a very large amount of electricity. And so that's really what it's all about. You know, what we actually produce as living beings. So, yeah.
Huh. That's pretty neat. When I look at your pattern, it reminds me of like, you know, when you're looking on like a microwave door, it's got those little octagon. Is that like the same sort of thing? You know how that?
Well, it is. So the microwave is a Faraday cage. And there's all kinds of Faraday cages. That's the one that people see every day. But yeah, if you look at the grid in the microwave oven door, you can see through it, but the microwave energy can't escape because that grid is smaller than the wave of energy coming out. So what happens is it's just kind of like a net. When the electrical energy hits that, it's always going to follow the path of least resistance. Well, when it hits that conductive material, it actually goes, instead of going through the grid, it actually gets caught up in that. And in a microwave, it goes straight to ground and ground out. Ours works very similarly. And that grid is sized and shaped to block the electric fields of the body. The only difference with ours, instead of going straight to ground, ours is actually held in capacitance within the suit, and it grounds out every time you touch ground. So it's since it's a low frequency and it's not, you know, it's not going to build up that quick, we can actually get away with the capacitance. It feels kind of like a battery, and then whenever you touch ground, it will instantly ground out. So pretty basic electronics with that.
So how did you get all this technology into a clothing system? Like,
That was the easiest part, honestly. So anytime you want to block an electrical field, the Faraday cage principle is the most effective way to do it. So, I mean, literally all you have to do is I mean, it's easier said than done, but I mean, all we needed to do was get a conductive grid. It could be, we happen to use conductive carbon, but you could use stainless steel. Matter of fact, our first original was stainless steel. You could use any, copper, silver, any kind of a conductive material that you can actually, make into a thread that you can actually, get it in a grid that's totally interlocking. So all we needed to do was determine the size of the grid. The conductivity has to be more than the conductivity around it. So that was fairly simple. And then the hardest part was actually finding a mill that could do it, because it is a very technical grid. But yeah, it's actually our conductive carbon yarn is woven into the fabric in that grid pattern. So basically the fabric is conductive all the way through. And that's the secret of it. But honestly, the concept is really easy. I mean, blocking the electrical fields is very well understood. It's just a matter of, what size the grid has to be and what the conductivity needs to be to do what you want to do.
So how long were you working on all this?
I started playing around with this in 2005, and we actually launched the company in 2010. So yeah, full 5 years of research behind, just getting everything, So we had a grid that would block as much as possible and that kind of thing. And then of course, finding something that was going to be usable, as far as comfort, our original fabric was actually have stainless steel as the grid. And as you can imagine, having wire in your clothing wasn't real comfortable, but it was just a process. And of course, a lot of scientific exploration, in the process as well. But we actually, I think we filed for patents in late 2008, and they started actually, we actually got the patents issued in 2010. So that's why we started, that's when we really started moving forward, was once all the patents issued, I knew we had something special that we could, that would make a good business.
That's pretty interesting. So how did you, where do you learn all this stuff? Or you just messing around with it and just kind of figured it out?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm kind of a science geek, so I don't have a degree in science or anything like that, but I've always been interested in how things work, and especially physics. I mean, I'm pretty strong as far as my understanding of physics. So, the biggest thing was finding out, or finally getting the realization that maybe it would make a difference to block these fields. That was the kind of the biggest realization. In the beginning, I mean, figuring stuff out nowadays, it's not that difficult. I mean, Google's changed the world when it comes to that. You can, if you know what to put in, you can find out just about anything on just about anything. So that's how we figured it out. It was just the biggest thing was finding out what you wanted to do. The how was the easy part. The what and why was the hard part.
So 2010, you launched.
Right. We launched Hex in 2010, and been going strong ever since. And so, I mean, on a crazy growth spurt now.
Yeah. So in 2010, who did you first start selling this clothing to?
Well, of course,
go ahead.
Yeah, I still had Winner's Choice at that time. So, that was a dealer based company. Our CEO, Scott Eastman, actually at that time was running PSE. Well, actually at that time he had just left PSE Archery, and he was, he was working for Limb Saver at that time, but he'd actually ran PSE Archery for 8 years. And so both of us had a big array of dealers, particularly that we dealt with. The problem was when we came out with this, nobody heard about it. I mean, they thought we were the craziest people in the world, people that knew us from our other, other endeavors. So it was a tough sale to start with. The only thing is, I've been using it for almost 5 years. So I knew 100% that we had something special. We just had to get people to give it a try. And, now it's a lot easier. And actually science has came a long ways behind us too, actually showing that, the animals actually do pick this up. I mean, there's lots of new scientific research on it. In 2016, there was a huge study on dogs that, dogs actually see it visually just like birds do. They found the same exact molecule in the eyes of canines. So, which fits with what we've been seeing with canines. I mean, even domestic dogs, I mean, there's a major difference. So, yeah, it's been a journey. There's no doubt.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of wondering is how, you know, introducing this sort of theory of technology into, you know, the whole concept with hunters, it must have been a challenge. It's,
you get a pretty thick skin to start with. Everybody thinks you're a, you know, snake.
Well, and you were well known. And you were well known in the industry to begin with, which probably made things a little easier, but I bet it still was
not really. We thought it would too, but it really didn't. I mean, people that we knew, you know, for years, I mean, just, I mean, they just thought we, this guy might went off our,
That's funny. So what type of clothing did you have when you first launched? Did you have like a full outfit?
Yeah. So our mesh suit, which we still have to this day, it's an improved version, of course, but yeah, our mesh suit, super lightweight, just basically houses the technology and you can wear it under or over. That was our first original. And then of course now we've launched into some other things, but that, our old, that original mesh suit was really the one that you know, put us on the map as far as, you know, proof and you know, getting people to see the difference and all that kind of thing. So, and we still offer that to this day, like I said, much improved version, but it's just a real, real basic, simple way to, you know, block the field. And that's where we were focused. So.
Yeah. I've never tried it, but I got my base layer suit in the mail last week. So I'm dying to get out and try it. So,
yeah. Well, if you're going to go turkey hunting, that's a great test because, I mean, it's over the top with turkeys. It really, really is. I mean, you'll be able to get away with movement and, you know, like you've never done before. Now, I don't know if you've got gloves or not, but with turkeys, particularly, gloves are pretty important because they literally see it visually. So you need to cover as much as you can. But, that's the only thing is, you know, certainly turkey hunters are going to see better results if they're using gloves, but, and of course you got to wear the head cover as well and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I bought that base layer package that you guys offer. I don't know if there's gloves in there, so I might have to go back online here.
Yeah, there won't be gloves, but we just got gloves in stock last week. So we're fully stocked on gloves now too. So.
Oh, perfect. I'll pick a set up.
It'll make difference.
If you're sitting out in the open with an orange vest on and, you know, those birds can see so well. I would never even have thought that would work. That's crazy.
Yeah, they see electrical fields really well. And I'm not saying that the turkeys have great eyesight, but the electrical side of that, once you understand that, it's honestly a bigger deal than any camouflage pattern or anything like that. You know, you still want to be, you know, I always like to still break up my outline. So I like to be setting with back cover, like a big tree or a big bush or something behind you, just to kind of break up that outline. Although we have done it sitting out with no cover at all, but you're just more successful if you have some back cover. But as far as between you and the bird, you don't need anything. You'll be able to draw your bow every time or raise your gun or whatever you're hunting with. So.
Yeah. So this electrical field that birds and or animals see, do some of them see it differently, or do they all sort of see it the same way? Or
birds are very well understood because they've been studying how birds navigate for a long time, and this visual electrical field theory has been around. It's actually pretty well proven now. You know, as far as big game goes, you know, as far as science goes, they say it's one of two things. There's either electrically conducted molecules in the eye, which is what cryptochrome is. Cryptochrome is what they found in birds and now canines. Or it's the electrically conductive element magnetite, which all mammals have. Interestingly enough, the more migratory the animal is, the more magnetite they naturally have. So like up north, caribou and those kind of animals have more than like a white-tailed deer does, although both of them have a significant amount. So that's the theory that most scientists feel is the right one as far as how mammals pick it up. But I can tell you that by blocking it all these years, there's no doubt they pick it up, because when you block it, you'll see a difference. So you're not invisible. You still got to keep the wind right and be quiet and all that kind of thing. But just the demeanor of the animal when they get close. One of the cool things with big game, you know, we have a lot of mule deer here. And, you know, one of the things you'll notice with particularly mule deer and elk, when they do pick you out, if you just sit still, it's usually inside of 30 seconds and they'll give you up completely and you can keep on stalking in. And on our YouTube page, there's all kinds of, you know, encounters with just about every animal you can imagine, you know, and so you'll be able to really see the difference on the video. But, you know, that's the same thing that our customers see all the time too.
Yeah. So how does this technology work with like sea creatures?
So we have a wetsuit line. Hex Aquatic has been out for a while. Actually, if you've watched Shark Week on Discovery, you've seen our logo for sure on a lot of top scientists. So, I mean, you know, seawater is very conductive, and you know, it's pretty well known with sharks and rays. Actually, they have a very well understood organ called the ampullae of Lorenzini, and it's actually an electrical. It actually picks that up. That organ is specific for that purpose. But you know, I mean, I'm not a big diver, but the divers that use it, I mean, they say all kinds of fish that they can get closer to. The other interesting thing is lobsters. When Hex came out, lobsters did not have electroreception according to science. But guys were wearing the Hex outfit, you know, the Hex wetsuit, and the lobster divers were going down, and instead of trying to, you know, sneak up on them and grab them real fast, they were just picking them up, and the lobsters weren't even trying to get away. So guess what? Now science 100% says, yeah, they have electroreception as well. So it's kind of cool. Like I said, our product was involved in some of those discoveries.
Yeah, no, man, it's totally cool. Like just the whole... Yeah, everything about it. I mean, and everything about it makes sense too. You know what I mean? It's, yeah, like once.
Yeah, yeah, once you understand the concept, it makes perfect sense. And yeah. And you know, the cool thing is once you use it. I mean, like I said, we hardly ever get anybody that has a negative thing to say if they have realistic expectations. I mean, you're not invisible. You can't, you know, stand up and do jumping jacks in front of a turkey and he's going to see. But I mean, as far as reasonable expectation, drawing a bow, raising a gun, you know, move, you know, slow movement, stuff that would get you busted every time is completely possible. And you know, another one, you know, you guys have a lot of bears up there. Bears are super sensitive as well. We've seen some over the top stuff with bears as well at really close range. So.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm really, really excited to try it for spring bear, because I still hunt spring bear archery like with my bow, so and I have to get pretty close, and they bust me a lot of the time when you walk in, and I'll just brush up on some gravel or, you know what I mean, you're hitting that grass and you make just a little bit noise, and then they turn, they're a little bit unsure, don't move for, you know, a few minutes, but I mean, the wind, you know, the wind could be right at your face still, though, they'll just take off and they run the other way, and you're like, man, what? Like, I had the wind, I had everything. I don't think he's seen me that well, but yeah, with this stuff, I'm super excited.
It'll definitely help. I mean, like I said, I mean, they can still hear and smell and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that when you take away the electrical field, that's what we're finding is that's one of the last things that, I mean, when they sense the electrical field immediately, then they know they got to pay attention because they know that they're around, you know, something's other big living being. So taking that away is a big advantage. It really is.
So what kind of distance do these animals, like what, how far away or how close do you have to be for them to start sensing this electrical field?
Well, it depends on the animal, and it also depends a little bit on your personal electrical field. Everybody's different. So, you know, at the trade shows, we actually measure with a meter. We can measure everybody's electrical field. It's crazy how much difference there is. But for me personally, with whitetail, mule deer, I've seen a difference further away. But for the most part, it's about 40, 50 yards, something like that for most species.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's further than you think. And then, you know, of course, the closer it is, the more prevalent it is as well. Mule deer, I've had luck with mule deer, honestly. I mean, we've stalked mule deer right out in wide open fields, and again, some of the YouTube videos are pretty telling on that. When they notice you, if you just stop and hold still, they give up quick. And I mean, gosh, we've stalked right in on them, you know, right out across wide open many, many times. So you know, like I said, it's one of those things. It just kind of varies on the animal and the situation and that kind of thing as far as how far it's going to be effective. But if you're a bow hunter, particular, anybody who's, you know, has to get close, it's definitely an advantage. But you know, even guys that are, they're gun hunters, I mean, you're also going to be spooking the stuff that's close to you a lot less. So even though you can shoot something at, you know, 300 or 400 yards or whatever, I mean, if you're spooking stuff right around you, sometimes you don't get that, chance, you know? So it just kind of keeps everything a lot calmer as far as the whole environment. You know, and that's why we have a Hex Wildlife line that's all about, you know, more for like bird watchers, photographers, just animal enthusiasts, people who want to leave us a smaller footprint when they're in the wild.
Right. And so they're using this stuff as well. That makes sense.
Yeah. Hex Wildlife's actually the fastest growing part of our company right now. It's
taking
off very, very well. Yeah. We've got veterinarians that use it. zoo people, just because it's, like I said, it's animals can pick up those electrical fields. Like, particularly if you're agitated or afraid, I mean, your heart rate's going up, so your electrical emission is going to go up right with it. And it's just, it just keeps animals a lot more calm, and you know, it's just more of a neutral environment, you know, when you're working with animals. So yeah, it's a, started out as hunting, but it's become a lot more than that.
Yeah. So the faster your heart's beating, are you giving off more of an electrical continuity that way when your heart's,
yeah.
So if you're,
yeah, 100%. When your heart rate goes up for whatever reason, whether you're, you know, exerting yourself or, you know, you're just excited or whatever, that's a corresponding, electrical field that gets stronger as that happens. So the heart's a really small muscle that puts out a whole lot of electricity. So that's what makes it unique in the body. But all muscles will put out that. So the larger the muscle, the more electricity it takes to move it. And so the more electricity it puts out. So that's why it's important to cover the whole body, torso being the most important, but all the big muscle groups, it's important to have it all covered. So you're blocking that field.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Are you guys are you guys constantly advancing this technology? Or you just keep working at it?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, we're developing new fabrics and new, you know, to kind of take advantage of different niches. We've developed a new fabric for the wildlife line that's going to be used for outerwear. And actually that stuff is actually being made now. So we're going to have a full outerwear line in wildlife, a revised one. We had one that was kind of a prototype line and we learned a lot from that. But the final version is actually, we should have it around the 1st of May. It should be online for the wildlife side. And of course, we're also developing new fabrics for the hunting side too, for some new products that are coming out there. So yeah, we never stop. I mean, it's always a process, you know. If you stop, you get behind. So you just keep moving forward, you know.
Yeah, I was surprised how fast mine showed up. I couldn't believe it. It showed up in less than a week.
Yeah, I mean, the cool thing with Canada, we actually invested pretty heavily. We now have a Canadian warehouse that actually has all the Hex products in it now. So instead of shipping it from the U.S. at a crazy cost, now our stuff can come out of the Canadian warehouse. And we just got that launched. I'm not sure if yours made it out of there or not, but right now we've got them fully stocked up there. So pretty much everything will come out of that warehouse.
Which part of Canada is the warehouse in?
It's in Southern Ontario, and I don't know exactly the name. The name of the town's a strange name, and I can never remember it. But yeah, but it's in Southern Ontario. So everything for Canada ships out of there. So you get it a lot faster. Also, you know, it saves you a lot. You know, but anytime we have to ship from the U.S. up there, it's crazy money for you guys.
Yeah, well, that was two things I noticed, that it got here in about 4 days, and I didn't have to pay any duty on it. Which is nice.
Yeah. So
nobody waiting at the door with, they weren't sitting there waiting at a door with their hand out looking for money.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And that's something that, you know, we're on Wild TV a lot up there. So we have a pretty big customer base up in Canada. And, you know, we just did this so we could serve that market a lot better. And, you know, I think I think everybody's going to enjoy it a lot more. It makes it much easier to get. And the other thing, yeah, they're not sitting there waiting for you to write them check or give you some cash out every time you deliver.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to try it out. Is there a best setup for, you know, for hunters to wear for this Hex clothing?
Not really a best one. There's a couple of options. Like I said, our mesh suit, the original mesh suit, is still a great option. It's super lightweight, super breathable, and you can wear it under or over. So it's not something that you have to wear on the outside to make a difference. So a lot of people wear that suit underneath, you know, their other camo clothing. You can wear it by itself if it happens to be super hot. We get a lot of that, especially in antelope down here, but you can wear it that way. And then we also have our base layer, which is a really high-end base layer akin to a Sitka or an Under Armour type base layer. It's more of a form-fitting one, a little tighter to the body, and it's basically made to be worn underneath. Now, we did launch that in a camo version because that shirt's really nice to wear as an outer layer as well. So that gives people an option, you know, with that as well. So, but yeah, those are our two basic options right now. But either one of them work equally well. I mean, as far as how it works, there's not one that's better than the other. It's more about, you know, do you want something that's, you know, lightweight and you know, not going to really add to your you know, to your insulative needs, or like I said, the base layer is a really good base layer and it has hex in it too. So it does everything.
Yeah. It's nice and warm too. I was surprised. I've tried it on already and I couldn't believe how warm it was.
Yeah. It's warmer than you think. And part of that is that grid, because this is something that, you know, talk about learning as we go along. We actually didn't realize this to start with, but when the electrical energy starts to build within the suit, it actually, one of the byproducts is heat. So it's a lot warmer than you would think for its weight. Particularly in the base layer, the mesh suit is because it's so breathable that you don't notice it quite as much. And then also people that have the higher your natural electrical output, the warmer it'll be on you too, because it's just that stored energy is building quicker.
Yeah, that makes sense. Cool. I see you guys got John Dudley working with you now.
Yeah, now, you know, I've known John forever. I actually met John back when I was shooting professionally. He and I shot a lot of tournaments together. And he actually was, in the Winner's Choice days, he was our overseas rep. So he was like our main guy for any overseas clients. And so I've known John, worked with John. John actually had one of the very first hex mesh suits. Back when they were still white. So before we even launched, he probably had one in 2008 or 2009. He's been around it for just about as long as anybody has. And of course, contractually, he couldn't talk about it for years and years.
Under Armour. Yeah, I get
but,
you.
But now he can freely talk about it. I love working with John. He's a class act, and a good buddy of mine too. So it's neat to see him involved.
Yeah, no, that's cool, man, for sure. But is there anything else you'd like to add about the Hex brand that maybe I forgot to ask you about or we missed?
Well, I mean, you know, people can learn about it at hexllc.com. It's H as in Harry, E like in Echo, C like cat, S like Sam. Then LLC.com. And you can go on there. You can choose which entity you want to look at. You'll actually see the Hex Hunting line, Hex Wildlife, Hex Aquatic, and also Hex Tactical, which is something that, we do some stuff with the military. So, we've got some special forces guys that use Hex. Specifically because they can get around dogs without them alerting as quickly. They've also done some wetsuits as well. So we only sell to the military through Tactical. We don't have a consumer line there yet. So you'll see that. But you can go online. You can learn, if you want to learn about the science, it's there. There's lots of videos. Again, the Hex YouTube channel has a ton of videos on it. So you can really kind of learn how it works and why it works and all that. And of course, obviously you can order right there. We are a consumer direct company now. So, the best thing to do is just go online, order it. We have a fit guarantee. So if you get it and it doesn't fit, we exchange everything free of charge. And,
For us Canadians, it's just super easy.
It is. And like I said, it's one of those things that, a lot of people don't understand, really what we're about at first, but once you understand what we do and how it works, you really will see a difference. Again, it's not, so you're not invisible, but it definitely makes a huge difference, specifically when things get in close and that's when everything gets exciting for a bow hunter. Anyways, when things get in close, that you get away with a little more movement, certainly keeps animals less, are more calm, and that just makes for better shots and better opportunities. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, man, I can't wait to try this stuff out. It's going to be good. I think, I think I'm going to notice it right away. I think especially with my spring bear hunts, it's going to be fun. Cool.
You'll like it. Like I said, it's one of those advantages that, you may not see a big benefit every time, but it won't be very long and you're going to have one of those moments like, wow, the squirrels aren't barking at me anymore. That's weird. Or, actually have a bird land on you or something. I mean, I can't even tell you how many birds I've had land on me since I've been wearing hacks.
Yeah.
It's one of those things you hear all the time from people too. So.
Yeah. See, I never even thought about, how many times do you sit out there and you get busted by a squirrel, right? I mean, I never even thought about that. Yeah. I haven't talked to you now today. Yeah. It definitely makes sense.
Yeah. No, it's a great advantage. It's like anything else. It's just a tool. and you know certain tools mm-hmm. work better in certain for certain jobs, but you're gonna love it when you try it. And,
yeah,
you know, that's the thing, everybody else will too. It's a neat technology.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's like you said, it's not a one all end all. I mean, you still got to worry about a few things mm-hmm. and a few elements, but it'll definitely give you that advantage for sure. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, getting quality shots and having a better time out there in the woods. So I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, well, Mike, it's been a lot of fun chatting with you today. Good luck on your bear hunt, and let me know how it turns out for you. I hope you have a lot of success up there.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to it. It's one of those bucket listers, so I try to do a bucket lister every year too, and this was a biggie. So we'll definitely keep everybody posted, and hopefully we have some fun things to show everybody on Hunting with Hacks.
Yeah, cool. Okay, man, I'm gonna let you go. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks. Uh-huh. Okay.
Bye.
You believe that? Wow. I guess it's all worth it.